The first panel of the day deals with soybeans, and soybeans have been very, very good in terms of their level of pricing, despite some bearish fundamentals, which we'll be getting into in our panel this morning. As we always do, we'll begin with opening comments, and we'll begin at the far end of the table with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And Dan, an opening comment, sir.
I think eventually the market is going to have to reckon with a pretty good movement of inventory into the world market channels during the summer months. But I think once that's behind us, I think longer term, one can kind of be friendly to the soybean complex. My caution here is one thing that I watch a lot is seasonalities and whether or not the market is following an average seasonal pattern. And if it's not following an average seasonal pattern, why isn't it? Or what will that lead to? And I think for the moment, soybeans, you have to kind of view them as in a sideways type market. However, there's a tilt to the downside. Most of the time you come out of February with a higher finish. This year we came out of February with a lower finish. So far this week we haven't really made much gains on the positive price action that we had here last week. So it's my opinion that unless something comes along here fairly quickly, soybeans are vulnerable to going into a counter-seasonal move that would maybe be mostly sideways, but it would be a sideways down into the first part of May. And I think the only thing that would fundamentally recognize that would be that sometime around May 1, probably most of the South American bearishness would be priced into the market, and the market would begin to worry about the U.S. growing season, whether or not all the acres got planted, whether they're going to be planted, what kind of conditions they are. So I think longer term, you can be friendly to the soybean market. There's a lot of curveballs out there, but in the short run, I think it's a sideways to sideways down type market.
Thank you, Wayne. Next to Wayne is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Grain Field Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Kurt, an opening comment.
Well, thanks, Dave. Just like Dan, it's a great pleasure to be here. This is sort of the highlight of the marketing meeting season, and each year it's amazing how you guys turn out and what a crowd we have here today. Beans. The thing I remember about beans is the early 70s quite well. We were putting beans up in the overhead bin in the crib, and I go, why are we putting beans in the crib here? Beans are at like $8. Why don't you sell them? I said, well, sold them for January delivery. Well, that makes sense. You put them in the crib and take them out later on for January delivery. I go, what'd you sell them for? $4.50. I go, what? $4.50. They go, my dad goes, that's the highest price we've ever seen for them. You know, if you remember back then, I go, wow, that's crazy. But the point is, carry out before the early 70s was 20, 30, 40 million bushels. Then we went to 100, 200 million bushels, and beans went sharply higher. Are we in that type of phase right now? Well, the jury's still out to say that or judge that just yet. The thing is, with commodity fund money investment in the marketplace, I can imagine just about anything is possible. Traditional commodity funds have over about $140 billion in the marketplace. That's gradually grown since about 1980. But the big unknown has been the hedge funds. We're not talking $100 billion, $140 billion. We're talking worldwide trillions of dollars. So with beans as volatile as they are, we get into some weather and some fund activity, just about anything is possible. But I agree, seasonally we are in the key time window right here. Seems like every year we have this meeting, we either move higher or roll over. We sort of like taking a serious look at doing some marketing through here prior to planning, because if we get in the field and there's no weather fear, I think the downside risk could be quite a bit here. We sort of like the opinion, sell and defend.
Thank you, Kurt. Next to Kurt is Wayne Nelson. Wayne is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Wayne, an opening comment.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's even greater to look out and see all the tables full for the first meeting. I asked Dave to be on the first one, figuring there wouldn't be a very big crowd this early in the morning. I wouldn't have to be embarrassed by too many people when I maybe tell you something wrong. But you guys made me wrong, and now I'm going to have to try to make it right. you know, it's hard when you follow two great analysts like this to have much more to say. You know, as we look at things, the fundamental setup doesn't seem to justify a rally at all. We've got way too many beans carrying over. We've got bird flu eating into the feed usage. We've had warm weather that cuts the feed usage for bean meal. We've got increased ethanol production projected for next year, which means more distillers' dried grain. We've got an increase in biodiesel, or hopefully bean oil to use for biodiesel, which means the crush should be high, which means that we're going to produce more meal than what we might just on regular usage. We've got the Brazil crop getting the rains they needed and the Argentine crop getting the rains they needed at the last moment. And we got exports lagging way behind. And yet, if you're a bear like I've sort of been for those reasons, you're just frustrated like the Dickens with the lack of follow-through to the downside whenever we get a sell-off. It just doesn't seem to happen. So, you know, we're looking at these funds, like Kurt was just telling us, coming in and buying massive quantities of things and really propping up these markets. You know, we watched yesterday towards the close. It looked like it was going to be a day to turn things around and push them on down. They didn't end up doing it because we saw some fund activity coming in the end of the day, pushing it back up to unchanged and selling off a little bit. So there's some underlying factors that are new. We can't look at seasonal charts with these index funds because they're new. And there is the good news is we're up a lot higher than we thought we'd be at this point in time. We should probably take advantage of it. The bad news is we can go higher if these funds decide to do it. So I'll agree with the first two guys and say we need to be selling a percentage and probably pushing our insured bushels up to lock in some of these. We've done some $6 puts and sold some $7 calls. And I think we'll, you know, move on with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wayne. And next to Wayne is Vince Renicky. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. And Vince, an opening comment, sir.
I don't know how much is left to be said, but certainly I appreciate the chance to be here again this morning and thankful for everyone that did show up, that braved the weather, I guess I should put it as. I was a little surprised whenever I walked out the door this morning and it was as foggy as it was, and then my family lives down around Taylorville, Illinois, and I called down there. I said, well, surely it's foggy as it is up here. Nope, sun's shining and it's beautiful. So I thought, okay, that doesn't happen very often, but nonetheless, that's kind of how the weather's been lately, it seems like. So just as all three have said already, fundamentals don't look anything bullish in beans. I can't say that enough. I mean, we've all heard that, and it frankly gets a little old sometimes. But nonetheless, you know, everybody has already mentioned that selling and defending, selling via put options, there's all sorts of ways that this market needs to be sold so that you can capture some upside. But the bottom line is that, remember, fundamentals will ultimately come to pass, and that will ultimately set the price. It doesn't mean in between that we'll trade fundamentals, but nonetheless, fundamentals will ultimately set the price. And so with that in mind, that's why you have to know that the bean market is overpriced at present. Doesn't mean it's going to go down tomorrow. Doesn't mean it's going to go up tomorrow. In fact, I think most everybody would agree that it could do whatever today or tomorrow. So, but certainly look at the overarching principles and use those for your marketing plan. I think that's the best advice I could give you in the bean market.
Vince, I want to stay right with you and ask you for some particulars on how to sell it to catch the upside, as you said.
Well, I think that probably as much as we don't like margin calls, I think you have to begin to understand them a lot more, and especially in the bean market. And I say that because when you look at the strategy that Wayne just mentioned, buying $6 puts, selling $7 puts, or selling $7 calls, I'm going to guess there's been a few margin calls on those, right?
Yeah, there can be.
Yeah, and that's just part of life, I think, guys. And so that's one thing that we're all going to have to get a lot better at. Doesn't mean we like it, but that's just part of life. And when you go into a position knowing what the outcome should be, then it's just a matter of sticking with it. And so it's a strategy such as that, buying $6 puts, selling $7 calls. It's things like selling the cash and buying a call option, which isn't cheap. But nonetheless, if you want upside, that's what you've got to do. it just comes back to establishing a floor and the tools that are available to you to allow you to catch some of the upside. And you just got to learn to use them and use them.
Wayne, you talked about yesterday and how the market broke to the downside, and at the end of the day, the funds came in and sort of bailed it out again. So the question I have for you is, where are the sellers, and how soon might they show up?
We'd all like the answer to that question, Dave.
Me too.
I think that we have seen a fair amount of farmers selling. I think that they are being reluctant here and in Brazil and South America and Argentina. That's one reason that we saw the shift of the five cargoes that were supposed to be loaded out of Brazil this past week shipped to the switched to the U.S. Because the supplies weren't because of the weights to load down there. And, of course, demurrage on big ships mounts into quite a bit. Last week we were told that we were 30 to 35 cents higher than Argentina on the delivered price to China, and yet they did switch those. So there is some problems in getting loaded down there along the way. I think we have seen the American farmer. We do have the supplies at the Gulf better, but at a higher price, but there are slow marketing and a little bit of rain delays in South America as far as going. I think that we have not seen massive sales or big sales by the American farmers as of yet. I think everybody is, the majority of farmers are sitting somewhere in the 10 to 20% sold. I think if you look at a lot of your advisory services, you're seeing as much as 70% sold in some cases. That way, feeling that the fundamental break will happen, just as Vince talked to us about. But I don't, we have to see probably the next report or the planning intentions report where we feel there's going to be more acres before we see the farmer, American farmers sell a lot more that will push those sales up by the commercials.
Wayne, I want to stay with you and ask you, when will the South America hedge pressure begin to come on strong? The harvest kind of ground to a halt in the last week. Does that make the window a little bigger or not?
The window is bigger because of stronger holding action than usual by the South American farmers. I think that that is unusual. We generally, in the past, have not seen them be strong holders. They're generally sellers at most any price right away, and it really does come in during the harvest time frame. And for some unknown reason, they've become a lot stronger holders. I think it's because they have a little better cash flow than what they did, and they are stronger holders now. So, yes, the window is wider than it was, not so much just because of harvest being delayed, but because of their actions by the farmers.
Kurt, we have a monthly USDA supply and demand report issued on this Friday, and world agricultural supply and demand tables as well. What is the trade talking about that will be the potential for this report?
Well, the big one's, of course, bean demand. As you look at the weekly export sales report, we continue to drag behind last year's pace. And the USDA has recognized that, but as of right now, I've not seen any big shift for, say, I think we'll probably see ending stocks increase by maybe 5 million bushel. We can take it up to 560 million bushels. That's the highest in U.S. history and also worldwide. As far as the South American crop, the private estimates continue to come in just a little lower when the USDA is. Things you got to remember on private estimates out of South America, they have the tendency to run 1 to 2 million metric tons below the USDA over the last 4 to 5 years. So if that's true, they might lower South production, maybe 1 million, half a million metric tons. But I look for some unchanged numbers on Friday.
You were talking a little bit about this counter-seasonal move to the sideways, to the downside, into May 1st potentially. Could you break it down a little more technically? What are the parameters and potentials of this move looking at the charts?
Well, my comment would be it's something to watch to see whether or not we're going to go counter-seasonal, because the month of February was basically neutral to maybe slightly down. I guess from a chartist point of view, I think if a week ago Monday's reversal up fails, and it hasn't failed yet, if it would fail, we would start going down underneath that low. I think then that would begin to increase the odds that we would go into a counter-seasonal move, which would be sideways down. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a big down. The only thing is it would indicate that we may stay mostly in a sideways type affair, waiting on the bigger move that's going to come in May, June, and July.
And what numbers, then, are you looking at as numbers that would have to be broken, say, in the November and in the May beans that would indicate that that counter-seasonal move might be underway?
I can't give you what the numbers are. Somebody might have last week's lows. That's what I'd be looking at. It would be down. I'm not really too sure where they're at. I got too many numbers in my head, Dave. I can't remember anymore.
Is one of them your zip code?
Yeah. But I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. We opened up, I think we traded sharply lower there a week ago, Monday or Tuesday. Then we came back and closed higher, and then we kind of followed through on that upside there on Thursday and Friday. So that's, I think, an important reversal to the upside. And if it doesn't catch, what you're going to do is see some long liquidation type pressure. One thing that might fuel some softness in here, and actually the whole grain complex, is that everybody keeps talking about these funds and index funds, and they're driven a lot by quarterly profits, quarterly statements, and there's reason to maybe believe that they might be printing some profits in here to dress up their quarterly statements, and that might be a reason why maybe the month of March here could be mostly a sideways type affair. In all of the commodities, waiting on that March 31st report, which will pretty well lay the framework, I think, for any kind of spring rally if one's coming.
Did Wayne and Kirk have some numbers? Were you passing numbers back and forth there?
Well, on this one service here, they had 591 in May beans. I think it's more like the 585 area. You take that out, we could probably drift lower. On the upside there, you're looking around the 610 area. Earlier, though, we consolidated. We formed a pennant, and we broke out to the downside. We're down 15 cents. Everybody bearish. No more late in the day. The friends came in. We ran her back up. Trade sideways for a day, and all of a sudden we took out the upside of the pennant. Now here we go. We're up 15 cents. Then fell apart. Commercials came in and just beat the crap out of the hedge pressure out of South America. So over the last month and a half, we've just been sideways in this 20, 30-cent trading range, and it's probably going to take the March 31st report or this report Friday to give the market some direction.
We've had a bull trap and a bear trap, both, I think. I want to talk a little bit, because it's in the news, and it's chatter, and you hear it everywhere, and you hear it at other places, other media outlets, too, and that's this avian influenza. And the story goes something like this. Avian influenza is in 33 nations right now, and the latest was in Poland, and there was some concern about whether or not a particular person got a human-to-human contact in Poland. And this concern is over the cull and how many birds might be culled because of the spread of avian influenza, migratory patterns. You know, it might be in North America pretty soon, the H5N1 strain of virus. And this is going to impact soy meal demand and corn demand. At least that's what other folks are saying. But I wonder if that is really true, because production has not slowed down in the U.S. in the poultry industry. And you really have to cull an awful lot of birds to really begin to make a dent in these export markets, it seems to me. But I'm interested in what you have to say. Is avian influenza, as we know it, the real deal in terms of stifling demand, or does it have to go something considerably stronger than it is up till now in order for it to be a real factor? Vince, I'll start with you.
I'm trying to think back to a conversation that we had a while back with one of the feeders in the southeast, and I want to say that they said, guys, if you know any different, but I think it's 6 months. In other words, you kill the whole flock in 6 months or so. That's how long it takes you. That's how long the cycle is, I guess. In other words, it takes you that long before you can provide birds again. I guess if I had any advice, it is that it's not like the cattle market or the hog market. Birds come and go a lot quicker. And so remember that the supply is a lot less, or is I was going to say a lot less cyclical, but it's just as cyclical. It's just that the cycles are a lot shorter. So with that in mind, I think that's something that we all have to remember, is that even if we do have to, you know, kill a bunch of birds and then clean a house out or do a lot of cleaning, it doesn't take nearly as long to re-ramp up the supply as it does in some of the other meat markets. And so that's one thing that has to be kept in consideration or taken into consideration where feed usage is concerned. I guess I would also say, too, that, you know, some, as many were talking earlier, I guess it was yesterday, I had the conversation, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I suspect last thing we talked about like that was rust. And so I don't know. I guess, you know, it probably does have a lot to do with why we're not feeding as much. I mean, China's a perfect example. They're not using near as many soybeans, right? And that's mainly because of avian influenza. But at the same time, we have to keep in check, again, and go back to how quick you can turn birds around. And I think that's what, I guess that's what maybe belittles a little bit that, in my opinion.
Is China's soybean demand slowing down, Wayne?
Well, as far as feeding birds and whatever, yes. In China, they have dropped probably 40 to 70% on the consumption of chicken, on the perception of what's going on, let alone the disease and what's happening. But China is still buying an awful lot of beans as of right now. Yes, they are still keeping their crush up, and yes, they're moving along. You know, if we looked last week, I think we were 42% of our beans went to China that were exported. So yes, they are still keeping up quite readily now. But the European and Asian countries have cut back immensely on their consumption of chicken. You know, if they cook it right, they're not going to get infected anyhow, but the perception is to be scared of chicken. Last week, it was noted that, you know, the Americans like chicken breasts. We eat the white meat. We export the legs and thighs. They were under 20 cents a pound to export those. So we're not cutting back on consumption in the U.S. yet. We're not scared of it here. We're educated more so. People are still eating chicken here. But the demand for export for the legs and thighs has dropped immensely. It was the lowest it had been in, I think, 5 or 6 years. I think that you are seeing consumption of chicken in a lot of places, too. We're seeing chickens killed a lot of places, whether it's avian flu or not. And you're going to have the expense of vaccinating and doing things along the way that way. So there's going to be a cutback in meal usage. Will it be to the degree that some people are talking about? We don't know yet, but there has definitely been a cutback abroad. And this is really hurting. Now, will they switch to pork or beef, which could even be better because a chicken is the highest converter of meal of all the animals. And if they would switch to beef or switch to pork instead, why we would actually use a little more meal.
What about you, Dan? Is this background chatter or is this something else?
My opinion is a burnout issue. Until the market is proven that we have cut back on demand. And I don't think there's been any evidence that there's been a slowdown in soybean meal consumption worldwide. And the reason I say that is we talked about bird flu during the month of November. So the market anticipated all this slowing down of demand in November, and we really haven't seen any yet, or at least I haven't seen any evidence of it on monthly balance sheets or monthly disappearance sheets. And so I think it's noise at the moment. I guess I compare it to a weather market. When we go up on hot and dry weather and then it rains and then the hot and dry weather forecaster says, oh, it's going to come back at us again, and the market keeps talking about distant maps are showing hot and dry weather, but the market's still going down. So I think it's kind of a burnout issue. Now, it is something that, when the market decides to focus on it, it probably will. You got to keep in mind that the markets will when a market wants to go higher, it's going to shake off bearish news and talk about all the bullish things. And if when the market wants to go down, it's going to shake off all the bullish news and focus on the bearish news. And right at the moment, the market wants to look past all that stuff right now.
Rabbits and chickens are the fastest critters I know. They can reproduce real quick. I agree with that. The main thing is we're talking about 200 deaths.
When you take regular flu, you're talking a couple hundred thousand worldwide, if not more. The other thing is that the fear spreading human to human, that would happen. Also, too, in Europe, they found the bird flu in cats, and the fear spreading to the pork industry. That would be a major concern there. Then lastly, the idea that I think Morocco tried to spin it is bird flu free grain, and there's ideas that there were bird droppings and some Argentine beans, and that would shut down world trade because you can't guarantee grain shipments bird flu free.
We have time for some questions from the room. If you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand so that we can get it, so everybody can hear it. Is there a question in the room at this time? How many folk in the room have old crop beans still to price? Fellas, what are your recommendations for old crop bean pricing at this point? Vince, help us. Bail us out, Vince.
Bail us out, huh? Dan, did you say something about tight farmer holding earlier? Or maybe it was Kurt that said something. Somebody said something about that. So maybe we just saw a little evidence of that. I don't know. Let's see.
I'd say, Dave, the audience isn't listening to all your analysts on WLLL. Mm-hmm.
How many people are listeners to AM 580 radio? Dan, I don't know what to tell you.
Huh?
They're listening. They're just not paying attention.
Well, I don't think you should have all your beans sold. Yeah. There's enough curveballs out here, at least for a while. I think that we can play some corn in the bin and beans in the bin and maybe even some beans on paper and corn on paper. I guess I'm in the opinion that, but you got there's the ice could get real thin and we could break through it. But the thing that I worry about trying to figure out a marketing strategy is we know we have something like 2.3 billion corn coming at us sometime in that August, September rollout. This is the first time in a long time that it's the first time in the marketing loan game that we've had something like 550 million beans coming at us at an ending stock. So we've always had this marketing loan dump in corn that's gave us that kind of V bottom and wide basis levels with, and of course last year Katrina made it worse. This is the first year we're going to have something like that in beans, or the potential exists there. So I get a little nervous what could happen in August and September if the first part of the growing season goes real well, because I think the market will jump ahead and anticipate that. Now the other thing is, though, this March 31st report coming at us may indicate that we don't have as many beans around as what we think. The market is acting that way. So, you know, like I said in the first part of the comments, is that supply tightening may be already underway and the market feels very comfortable of it. Now, that doesn't mean that we still ain't going to have a record carry out and we ain't going to have this and that, but supply tightening has taken hold, and when that takes a hold, the market has to adjust its prices because it was priced in at a larger supply. So I guess my guess is that sometime here as we go down the road, once the trade visualizes the crops being planted, you need to make some decisions pretty quick. Because I think if everything goes real well, we could go sharply lower into some kind of July-August low, and then the long-term demand market begins. But this marketing loan thing that we have to deal with, end users, why would they get in a big hurry to buy beans knowing that there's going to be a marketing loan dump coming at us sometime here in August, September?
Kurt?
We like being 75-80% priced in old beans, and we see a point to replace ownership on paper. Reason being is with the carryout we have, the risk is in the basis. One of these days you're going to see beans up 30, and you're going to call Greg over there at the Andersons, and he's only going to bid five higher. They're going to widen the basis out just because we've got ample supplies of old crop beans around, so it makes economic sense to transfer ownership. to paper take the full advantage of the rallies and through the growing season. But Dan's right. If we have some favorable weather, favorable growing conditions, you're just going to see this basis fall apart right prior to harvest and thereby makes room for storage.
Get back to
Not that I was dumbfounded necessarily, just that a little surprised. But nonetheless, let me first address, I can say, you know, I have a number of customers that still have some old crop beans, i.e. one load of beans, generally not much. Why? Because the price is not whatsoever fundamentally supported. And then I'll go back to my comment earlier about knowing how to use and using the tools that are available. You know, again, that is more necessary, in my opinion, right now than ever. I can also tell you that if you are holding hedged beans, in other words, your bins are full of beans that you've already established a price on, you're just simply watching the carry and basis levels, okay, I can understand that. Basis levels are, I guess, low or ugly, to say the least. Mostly, in my opinion, because the board is overpriced. That's why you see basis levels wider than normal and wider than they probably should be. But again, carry in the market, you know, the differences between the two different months is substantial. I don't remember a time in the recent past where the market has actually paid you enough to financially look at carrying soybeans, carrying a hedged position on soybeans. So I guess I'll go back to and say that if that's why you're holding your soybeans, then I can understand that because basis levels are pretty wide and pretty ugly. If you're holding off pricing your beans because basis levels are ugly, I don't look for that to change until the board changes. In other words, just like I said a minute ago, I think the reason why basis levels are wide, abnormally wide, is because the board is too high. I think that's what it's telling us. And so that means you better price your futures, get your futures price established before the board goes down, because that's the only way you'll see a little bit of basis rally. Again, all just my opinion, but I think owning cash soybeans is probably a pretty risky business at this point.
Wayne, anything?
Yeah. You know, I give you all the fundamental reasons why the bean market should go down. It hasn't. If you read 9 out of 10 analysts on the web, on your DTN screen, whatever, all of them tell you the fundamentals are negative. To quote Freeze Notice, one of the reasons we're having a rally in the beans is everybody is bearish and everybody can't be right. So maybe as we look at all this, there is an overlying thing that we're not seeing that's out there. Is the thing the index funds? Is the thing some weather that's maybe going to happen? There's something that a lot of us, including myself, are not seeing that is holding this market up. Whenever we don't understand anything, the favorite word of every analyst is the funds just come in and did it. Unfortunately, I'm one of the people that use that line too. But, you know, that's a poor excuse. There's a reason the funds are doing it. We maybe don't understand that reason, but these markets are being held up and they're being supported right now. And there is a reason. I just don't know what it is.
Where are you on your new crop strategies? And we'll go down to Vince and start there.
We're roughly 40 to 50% priced on new crop beans. And that can be anywhere from an actual cash sale where basis has been established to a hedge derived to also, you know, the same or similar strategy to what Wayne was talking about earlier, buying a put and selling a call. So, you know, I don't think there's any reason to sugarcoat anything here. That's just where we feel like we should be because prices are higher than they should be.
And we'll go ahead and catch up with Kurt on that issue.
New crop beans cash market, $6. We've let a lot go, officially 30% priced. What our plan is to get up to 50% fairly quickly here. We're planning on making advice to buy November $7 soybean calls at 15 cents to replace those cash sales. Oftentimes you make $6 sell. If it goes to 6.5, you feel bad about it. If it goes above 7, you're kicking yourself in the rear end for selling them. So we're selling, defending the $7 benchmark. What we have done is for the more aggressive traders, sold 740 calls, use those to help buy some $6 put options. There's several ways to go. You're all a little bit different and have different financial commitments and marketing ideas, but we feel you've got about 2-3 weeks in here to get some type of marketing program in place.
Wayne?
Well, I agree with Kurt and Vince both. We're anywhere from 30 to 50% market, depending on how aggressive the individual wants to be. And we're in cash, we're in futures, and we're in options. So we've got it spread around depending on the individual and what they feel like. What type of insurance you're carrying. If you're using the CRC or the RA, the CRC is cheaper in our area, you can be a little more aggressive in selling up your guarantee. Although I hate to say it, I think probably this year the GRIP insurance is going to be the best in beans because as I look at the fundamentals, I think we've got a real chance of dropping a dollar in the bean price by this fall, and that's going to make that crazy policy, even with a good yield, pay like the dickens one more time.
And Dan?
Oh, we must be all wrong.
That's why I put the contrarian last.
Well, one thing about giving market advice, I guess I've been in this business for 30-some years, is that we're always wrong because we never have as much sold when it goes down, and we always got too much sold when it goes up. So 30% puts us in that position, we're going to be wrong. So either you should have zero or 100, and you're going to be right or flat wrong. I'm in that 30% camp. You can determine whether or not you're going to be an aggressive 30 or a weak 30. And I'm basically looking at the potential that beans could have moved a counter-seasonal decline into May. And I've talked about that already, and it was my intention that sometime around middle part of May is when I'd make my moves to cover those positions. And the reason I say first part of May or middle part of May, if you go back and look, and each year is different, I know that, and this may be the year that nothing works, but that is when the market sizes up new crop prospects and it panics if things ain't going well. But you can go back and look at the 93 market, that is when the market decided that, hey, not all this crop's going to get planted. It took off in mid-May. You can go back and look at the 1988 market. It was dry. The weather forecasters kept calling for rain, and each one came across, and it was just really disappointing. About middle part of May, the market decided, hey, we're not getting any rain, so it took off. So I kind of think if this market's going to take off substantially because of weather, it's probably not until May, and I know everybody's real uneasy about weather because it has been dominantly dry in here, but that can change in a hurry. But so I'm in that 30% camp. Like I said, we're probably all wrong. So I was basically looking at a counter-seasonal move for the time being, but I think anytime after May, though, then it would get in sync and be actually go counter-seasonal during the summertime.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Vince Renicki of Strategic Farm Marketing. Let's give these guys a big hand.